This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable. All right, ladies and gentlemen, his name is Kyle. My name is Dan. This is the Man Therapy Podcast. And our audience is growing a little bit, my friend.
Say more.
It's not huge, right? It's not big. It's not even really medium, but there's but I can say things like the numbers are so small that I can say we've increased by 100%. You know what I mean? Like, so we go from 25 listeners to 50 listeners or something like that. You know what I mean? Oh. So, I don't know. That means there's that many people out there who are listening to this, who find value in it. And, I don't know what this is like for you, but for me, this is in a way therapy itself. Like these are things that I don't talk with anybody else about. These aren't things that, I don't want to, or I don't get the opportunity to. And so, in a way it's like, I don't know. I really like it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, therapy and having a good conversation with a close friend can be very similar. There's ways they can be really different, but at its essence, a major similarity is talking about things that are on your mind that you don't ever take time to bring to the forefront. Yeah. It's like we all have thoughts and feelings that come up throughout the days and weeks and months that are important, but we kind of shove them to the back in service of focusing on whatever is the most pressing in the moment, which is like, oh, dude, do the next podcast episode and edit this and get that put up and get the, make sure the kids' baseball uniforms are ready to go. And well, look at the family schedule and this cleaning needs to be done. And I need to go here and I need to mow the lawn. Like there are a bunch of things in life that just plain push themselves to the forefront because they're time sensitive and they have to get done. Mm-hmm. So then all of these programs we're running in the background never get to be brought to the forefront. Right. And so it's really cool if you can have a good, a real conversation with a good friend or go to counseling, because then all those things that you just keep pushing to the back, you get to bring to the front and talk about for an hour.
Yeah. Yeah. But I will say this. In the past, I've had conversations with like friends or buddies or acquaintances. Mm-hmm. And there's been a couple things like, hey, they either don't open up fully, right? Or trust me with any of their problems or I don't do that to them, or it turns into something that has no value. And that's bitching about, for example, like, oh, my wife today, she did this and this and this. And then there's nothing that comes away from it. It's just a bitching session, which maybe sometimes people need, but I don't necessarily like that too terribly much. Like I don't necessarily like shitting on people too terribly much when they're not there to defend themselves. You know what I mean? In a way it's just like talking shit behind somebody's back.
Yeah. Right. I agree with that. Also, I try to be careful who I vent to because if I'm venting about someone important, then I don't want anyone to have a negative perception of that person.
Right.
So I have like a very small circle of people that I'm willing to like vent to. Mm-hmm. And then beyond that, it would just be gossip and, that's not productive. And venting is not productive after a certain point. Like it's okay to vent a little bit, but if you vent too much, you're just rehearsing negativity. And yep. I don't think that's good. I think you're spinning your wheels at that point. There's a quote, and I don't know whose quote it is, so I'll have to paraphrase it, but it was something to the effect of great minds discuss ideas, average minds discuss events, small minds discuss people. And so I try to stay out of the, what'd you call it? Gossip. Try to stay out of the gossip mill.
Yeah. Which is hard in a small town, dude.
Like, yeah. Right.
It's almost like it comes looking for you. Sometimes someone's like, did you hear about those people? I'm like, no, I didn't hear about them, nor do I give a shit about them. Like I got my own deal over here that I'm working on, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I lean more towards, it's none of my business. Like,
yeah,
no, if I don't want my business on blast for everybody to know. Yeah. And like, if somebody else is going through something, like I kind of would rather be respectful and not hear about it.
Absolutely.
If I could help, that'd be one thing, but just to hear, like, I don't know. Gossip feels satisfying to some people, because it's like, it's almost like a bully, where if you're not feeling good, you put other people down so that you feel better. And gossip is like, you know, a less violent version of that, where it's like, oh yeah, something bad happened to somebody.
Let me ask you, I don't know why this just popped into my head, but have you ever had anybody convince you to try to, like, as an adult, try to convince you to not like a person or to do something that, like, maybe would go against your character or think a certain way or do something that is just like complete, like you feel is completely ridiculous?
Boy, nothing's coming to mind off the top of my head for that. I'm sure that has happened. And I'm sure there's times where I felt yucky being like in a group of people gossiping and talking shit. And also, just to be super clear, like, not to say I've never like gossiped. I have. Not proud of that. It's something I try not to do, but I definitely have done it. One actually positive experience comes to mind. There's a guy that you and I both know that, our sons ride dirt bikes together. And so we go, we spend a lot of time in he's got this big, like, cargo van, or I don't know what to call it, a big, like, contractor van. You know, you can stand up in it and walk around. It's huge. And he hauls the dirt bikes, and we travel, you know, far away to ride. So we'll be in the car, in the van for, you know, 5 hours in a day, or longer. And so, you know, you just sit there and talk the whole time. And he never talks about other people.
Yeah.
Like, he never talks shit. He never talks about other people. He never gossips. He has no interest in it. He doesn't bring it up. He doesn't entertain it. And it's refreshing.
That's awesome.
Oh, dude, that's, it's awesome. Like, it's cool. Even sitting there trying to fill, you know, 5 hours sitting next to somebody, seat time. You know, I noticed my mind drifting to like, ooh, did you hear this about this person? And I've noticed myself stopping myself and not doing that, just because I know him, that he doesn't want to do that. If stuff like that's ever come up, it's like falling flat on its face. Cause
I want to be more like that, dude.
Oh, for sure.
I want to be like that, because positive, like,
influence,
dude. I heard a rapper say this once. He's just like, I think the exact quote was like, you know, in all his gangster essence, was like, gossip is a bitch trait, you know? And I'm just like, he's right. You know, like, he's right. A man doesn't need to be doing that. Right. Save that for whoever else wants, but a real man doesn't do that stuff. And so after hearing you say that, that's my goal. That's my short-term goal for the rest of this week, is to not talk about anybody. About, unless it's my family, you know what I mean? Like, to my family's face, you know what I mean? Like, if I got a problem, I'm going to go right to my kids with it, or my wife with it. I'm not going to talk behind people's back, and I'm not going to entertain gossip. That's the one. Yeah. Right. I like that. Right. That's something I want to work on.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool. It also, like spending all that, seat time with him, like, was a bit of an eye opener to recognize, like, how much I naturally do that, which again, it's a thing I don't value. Mm-hmm. It's just an easy thing. You know, when there's people that you each know, there's people that you have in common, then obviously there'd be things that's like an obvious thing to talk about, but it's low hanging fruit, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's lowbrow to gossip.
Yeah. What you don't know he's doing is as soon as you get out of the van, he's calling all the people that you talked about. He's like, hey, Kyle hates your guts, and just like stirring the pot behind your back.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. That would be funny. I know that he's not doing that, but that
I know, would be funny. I know. Just right behind your back, like just stabbing you right in the back.
Yeah, yeah.
That's funny. Yep. Okay. So we've done our little. Where they there's a couple movies where it's like, it is mandatory in our country to do 10 minutes of conversation before we do business. And so we've done that. And now, I kind of want to, we left last week's episode, by the way, last week's episode, I thought was one of the best ones we've done in a while. But we left with this choose your own adventure kind of deal, where there's some other things that we wanted to entertain. And so I'm going to pass it to you and just kind of basically say here, let's talk a little bit about some of the things that we wrote down at the end of yesterday or of the last podcast that we did about additional topics we could talk about.
Yeah, right on. So I think the cliffhanger from the previous episode was, or the direction that we were going in was the idea of having humility in relationships, mm-hmm. and the concept of being willing to hear critique and criticism,
yeah,
and how to be willing to consider it, and also knowing what to accept and what to reject based on your values. You know, you had asked me, oh, has there ever been a time when da da da? So I'll ask you, like, has there ever been a time where/ what are your thoughts about hearing someone give you critical feedback or critique or criticism? And talk to me about like what that feels like for you, generally speaking. Also, talk to me about what you feel is the difference between hearing critique or criticism from like a friend or a colleague compared to what it might feel like from your partner.
All right, guys, you know me, and I love eating wild game, but I don't eat wild game every single night. Every once in a while, I'll reach for a side of beef, and that's why I trust Omaha Steaks. Because Omaha Steaks are sent directly to my door, I can keep my freezer stocked without having to go to the grocery store. It's honestly like having a trusted butcher and gourmet food shop right at your house. Last week, I pulled out their pure ground ribeye burgers for a quick grill session. The flavor and marbling was unreal, rich, juicy, and miles ahead of any average grocery store meat. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. I've been trying Underbrush from Nathan & Sons, and it's not really regular gum. It's remineralizing chewing gum, basically an oral care routine in gum form. You brush in the morning and at night, but after lunch, there's a big gap where most of us do nothing for our teeth. Underbrush is made for that moment. Chew it for 5 to 10 minutes, spit it out, and move on. Or keep chewing it if you like the feel of it. It's made with something called hydroxyapatite. That's the same mineral your enamel is made from, and natural saps like mastic and spruce. So it has a firmer, really satisfying chew. The company is only a few years old, and the team is literally making, packing, and shipping gum every day. So if you want a simple daily upgrade for your teeth, check out Underbrush from Nathan & Sons. Check them out today at nathanandsons.com. Yeah. For me, it's very black and white. So here's what I'll say. From a business standpoint, if I'm getting paid or am paying this person, I expect you, if I'm paying you to do something for me in one of my businesses, then I expect you to take criticism from me and adjust it or work on it, right? I'm paying you to do that. If you are paying me, I expect you to critique what I'm doing and say, hey, man, we really like what you're doing, but we would like to see you do this or this or this. Okay. And my brain's, you use the word critique and criticism, right? Mm-hmm. Those to me are the same, but completely different at the same time, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Criticism, I don't know why, but for me has this more negative connotation. Critique is like more positive. It's worded better. There's no resentment behind it. Like a criticism could be resentment driven mm-hmm. potentially. But mm-hmm. when I hear critique, it's business or not business now, mm-hmm. or criticism, business or not business. Now, if I load the dishwasher and empty the dishwasher or rotate the laundry and fold it and put it away, and someone says to me, oh, yeah, I don't like the way you do that. Do it this way. I would go, if you want it done that way, then you should do it yourself, mm-hmm. right? I've went out of my way. Well, I don't not necessarily going out of my way, but I've done it. It's done. The laundry, it's clean, it's folded, and it's put away. If you don't like the way that I do it, well, then you should do it. Like as far as household chores are concerned, or that's the first thing that popped into my head.
Yeah.
But what I like in my marriage or any relationship, I would like to get to a point where there is none of that. Right. I get like, hey man, can you do me a huge favor? And I don't know, recently it's been, can you do me a huge favor and close the door? Or close the garage door when it rains, because we get a lot of blow in. I don't know, just the way our house is, into our garage. I'd appreciate it. And then you explain why. I don't want the baseball bags getting wet. I don't want the, all the stuff we keep in our garage to get wet or whatever. I don't know if that's a criticism or a critique of how people do things, but that's the first thing that popped up. And I know I'm hoarding this right now, but the thing that I am always curious about is, where does this start? Where do critiques and criticisms start? Is this like a chicken and the egg where someone is responsible for doing it first? Therefore, the other person feels like threatened by it, and then they do it back, and then it just goes into this teeter-totter motion where it's just back and forth. And then it gets to a point where resentment starts to creep in, and you know, it's just like, I don't know. I feel like there's this seed that needs to be planted. Is it watered with positive energy, or is it watered with negative connotations? And the outcome of that is where it goes. I'm sorry, I just blacked out. What did I say?
No, you did great. I asked you a long yep. question. Where my mind goes when you say all that is that if not done purposefully, positively, mm-hmm. it can have a negative connotation, which then defensiveness can start building on both sides.
Yeah.
That we might not, we might not give the other person the benefit of the doubt as much as we should, or as much as we would, because right. we think the comments are laced with negativity. You know, I we've talked a little bit about the most, like giving people the most generous interpretation. Mm-hmm. I think that's really important to do. I think that if we don't do it purposefully, then we end up kind of falling victim to, our negative bias. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, like when you said, if you don't like the way I do it, you can do it yourself. I think a lot of people feel that. I think I have felt that as well. And then I have to press pause and say, you know, why not ask them to explain why they want it done differently? Mm-hmm. What is it about the way I do it that you don't like? Why do I jump straight to defensiveness rather than asking, oh, what do you mean? Like explain mm-hmm. why that would be better. Yeah. You know, especially if I think I'm so rational and reasonable, which I think that I am, but I also know that I can have this defensiveness.
Yeah. That is a little bit defensive on my part, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Another thought that slipped my mind around
why do you think that is? Why do you think people, because a graphic designer, I pay him to create an image for me. He brings it back to me. I critique him. If he can't, and he can't handle critique, well, I don't pay him, and then I never talk to him again. But you can't do that with your kids or your wife, right? I can't just go, you're done, because she critiqued me on how, or didn't like the way I talked to her, or she talked to me about how the dishwasher gets unloaded. Like, that seems a bit ridiculous. If there's so many more underlying problems with your relationships, with your marriage, if a dishwasher is the reason you get divorced, right? If that's the straw that breaks the camel's back, then, you know, there's underlying issues there.
Yeah. You know, also a thing that I've noticed, and I bet there's good reason for this that I haven't read any research about specifically, but man, why is it hardest with our spouse? You know, why does it seem like it's so hard? Like, even in my counseling practice, in my relationship and relationships I've, you know, observed in people around me, it's like the spouse, and it go either way, whichever partner, the spouse a lot of times is the worst positioned person
the
to
anvil.
Give feedback. It's yeah. like, they, you know, they... You might say the same thing. You might say something to your spouse like, hey, like this would be better, or, oh, hey, we shouldn't do it like this, or we should do it like this. And, you know, they're like, F you. Mm-hmm. But then like the next week, maybe one of their friends says, oh, you should do it like this, or you shouldn't do it like that. And they're like, oh, that's a good idea. Yeah. And then they change and you're like, what the heck? I just said that. Like, I've been saying that for months. Yeah. And vice versa. Like, you know, we're probably, you know, I could be guilty of that too, that my spouse is like, hey, please don't do it like that. And I'm like, whatever. And then one of my friends is like, hey, you shouldn't do it like that. I'm like, oh, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Why is our spouse so poorly positioned to give us feedback, or why are we so unwilling to hear it from them? I think we just have this defensiveness built up.
Think it's a comfortability thing, right? There's no other person that I would feel comfortable venting my problems to than my wife, right? She is my favorite person in this world on like a positive note, right? And so with that comes a comfortability to where when you're having a bad day and you can't tell your boss to go fuck themselves, right? You need an outlet for that frustration. And a lot of times what I'm guessing is that that frustration goes to the next thing. And that next thing is the dusty, TV stand or that. And then that turns to something that has nothing to do with where your frustration is, but because you're already frustrated from something that does not include your spouse, that's where your frustration then goes. Right. So you're making a mountain out of a molehill, essentially, and you're taking that frustration out on the closest person to you. And that's the spouse.
I think you're right.
That's a guess.
Yeah, no, I think you've intuitively touched on something that, again, I couldn't produce the research for, but I would like to read more about it. But
yeah,
I do think that there is something to the people closest to us that we feel closest to, that we feel the most confident aren't going to leave us. Mm-hmm. That's where we feel the safest discharging our emotions.
Right.
We feel safe to emotionally discharge on them. And then they're like, they just catch the brunt of it. They're just catching strays in life, dude.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, yeah, I'm stressed about this, 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 and this. I come home and then I'm like snappy towards my wife. And she's like, what the hell? I haven't seen you all day. How could you possibly be irritated with me? Mm-hmm. And it's like, I'm not. I'm just irritated. But then it's coming out. And, you know, that's why kids fall apart when they get home. Like, they can be very well behaved all day at school because they're following the rules. And then when they get home, they just fall apart. And you're like, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah.
Well, it's because they feel safe to discharge. I think for kids, it's understandable because they're just kids. But I think for adults, I don't think it's a good enough excuse to say, well, I just had a bad day and this is where I discharge. Yeah. I think this is a place where we need to step up and be more purposeful in how we interact with our partners.
Yeah.
Our partners shouldn't get the worst of us.
Exactly. Exactly. Dude, I've been trying really hard this year to bring the best version of myself to my wife. Right. And, you know, even when in a relationship, you like, it's so easy. We talked about this, dude. It is so easy to be an asshole, right? My goal is to not do that anymore. Like, I am trying to just be like, hey, what can I help you with today? Right. And I'm going to be honest with you. A lot of that has been coming from my time reading the Bible when, dude, I don't want to sit here and preach religion to people. I don't want to be that guy who's like, hey, in order to be, you know, like in order to truly be a good person, you have to be Christian and read the Bible. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, dude, the Bible as an adult reading it again is a roadmap for people to find positive energy, how to treat people and how to stand up for yourself when being treated poorly, right? Like it is a way for me when I'm frustrated to sit back and just be like, hey man, you know, remember all those bracelets and t-shirts that came out a long time ago? It's like, what would Jesus do? Right? If you ask that question, if you're a Christian or you're frustrated in your life and you're looking, what would Jesus do? And you go to the Bible and maybe you do a little research. You don't even have to be a full believer at this point. Just take a look at the book. And it just basically was, hey man, if someone does this to you, ignore it. If someone does this to you, maybe even like one of the stories in the Bible is if a Roman soldier makes you carry his bags and gear for 1 mile, carry it for 2 miles, right? And there's stories behind all of this stuff, but basically it's just like sometimes in life, man, you just got to eat a shit sandwich, right? And you have to be able to absorb some of that negative energy and not project it back on other people. Because if you don't do that, if you continue to do that, it just keeps getting worse. It snowballs. And I am trying real hard, even though I'm like, my body is conditioned to have reactions. I'm trying to break those conditions and just try to be a better person, Bible or not.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate that. What it kind of boils down to for me, it's the thing I've been trying to keep in mind recently is be responsible for your own attitude.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you might feel so justified to be irritated.
Yeah.
But you're still irritated. Mm. You know, and do you want to live your life irritated? Every minute that you live your life being irritated is 1 minute you didn't get to enjoy your life.
Yeah.
And just the mathematics of it is the less you're irritated, the better your life's going to be. And yeah. Who's in charge of your emotions? It's you.
Yeah.
So I try really hard, and I'm not perfect at this at all, but I try really hard to be responsible for my own attitude. And when stuff gets hard, I try hard to choose a good attitude. Yeah. When I notice, like, you know, I'll be in a bad mood. And when I notice that, that's my cue to be like, wait a minute, this is yours to manage. This is nobody else but yours.
Yep.
Also, I think there's a fallacy for us to assume that other people have more influence over our mood and attitude than they actually do.
Oh, 100%.
If other people are affecting us that much, it doesn't necessarily mean that those people are that bad. It might actually be exposing how weak we are at controlling our own attitude.
100%. 100%. If you think someone else being negative influences you to make you negative, why don't you try the reverse of that and be positive, and maybe that positive energy will influence other people? And I'm a firm believer in that. And I try my hardest every single day. Some days, here's the deal. I'm not a perfect person. I'm going to make mistakes. I'm going to have bad days. But if you keep trying, and this brought me, when you were talking about that, have you seen the dots on a big piece of paper that represent the average human life, right? Like, I don't know if it was broken down in days or if it was broken down in by months or whatever the case is. And you spend on average, you spend this much time sleeping. So they have, they fill in the circles. You spend this much time at work. You spend this much time doing these things. And I would like to know, you know, for certain, some people are just optimists. Some people are just happy and they're able to just deflect all that, you know, deflect all of that. But some people can't. So I would love to see that red, that theory where people could automatically, like, I don't know what the deal is like. They look at that and they're going, holy shit, I'm negative all the time. I mean, wouldn't it, it's like that theory where, if you knew how much, they did this theory where, or this test where they put how much money people made and they made it wear them on their forehead. The people who made more money were being, they were, people were nicer to the people with the most money, right? For some reason. And the people who didn't make hardly any money at all, they were, you know, they were like treated less or something like that. So it would be cool to be able to see how much, I don't know, how much money or not money, how many days of your life you've spent arguing and being negative and things like that. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. By the way, your camera's messed up. I don't know if you can see that. Oh, yeah, there you go.
I don't know. There.
Yeah. You know, you said that, you know, those people just, they just have this good attitude. I don't think they just have it. I think that attitude is actually cultivated. I think that they, that's like saying somebody muscle, just has a good physique. I think it's more I think the people that have a good physique don't just have a good physique. They've likely like worked on it really hard and then they continue to, maintain it. Like once you get a good, the hard part, I think, is probably getting the good physique. And then once you have the good physique, it's still work to maintain it, but it's not as hard as it was to get it. And so then it can look easy to other people. Well, easy for you, but it's like, no, it's not easy. That was earned. That physique was earned. So I think a positive attitude can be cultivated and earned and then maintained. And I think it starts with taking a good, hard, honest look at yourself. I probably told this story in one of our first podcast episodes, but I'll retell it because it impacted me positively. I went on a camping trip in the Boundary Waters with my friend and his family. There's three men in their family, their dad, two brothers. Each person got to bring a friend, so there's six of us men on this trip, and it's a lot of canoe time, a lot of time in the canoe. And so, you know, there's no cell phones. We didn't bring like a speaker or anything. So it's just you and your canoe mate for hours canoeing. And so you talk. And I ended up in the canoe with my friend's dad. And his dad was like a really successful lawyer in Minneapolis, was a partner at one of the biggest law firms in Minneapolis. Very high stress job, very successful. So, I like him a lot. I respect him a ton. He's a really cool dude. And I asked him something like, hey, how are you able to let things roll off your back? How are you able to stay so calm and measured all the time? Like nothing seems to bother you. How are you able to do that? 'Cause he's very much like that. Anything that ever came up is like, oh, that's okay. We'll figure that out. Constantly. That was always his answer to everything. Like, we'll figure it out. It'll be okay. And it always was. Then he would like take the steps to make it okay. Granted, money is like a positive there. If you have plenty of money, then it is easier to make things work out okay. But he just was very even emotionally, which is really what I was interested in. And so he told me, he said, I wasn't always like this. I used to be really stressed out because of my job. I used to be really frustrated and irritated and irritable. And he said, one day I decided to sit down and watch old videos of Christmas morning, of my kids opening their presents on Christmas morning.
Interesting.
Because I thought it'd just be like fun and it would feel good. And he said on those old tapes from years ago when his kids were little, he saw himself frustrated, irritated, barking at him, snapping at him. Come on, be quiet, settle down, don't make a mess. Just barking at his kids on Christmas morning. And he said he felt ashamed of himself. He said that was a wake-up call. He said, I had never seen myself do that. Yeah. He said, I did that all the time, but I never witnessed it. And so he wasn't like looking for self-actualization, but he saw it on the tape. And he said it really like struck him to his core. Yeah. And ever since then, ever since he saw himself behaving that way, he turned the corner and was like, I'm not going to be like that anymore. That's not how I want to be. It's not how I want to live my life. It's not how I want to treat my family. And he made a big change and got like really patient. And I was like, oh.
That's awesome that a person has enough willpower to do that, right? Like for me, dude, I catch myself doing that sometimes too. And I'm just like, what a dirtbag. I feel like a dirtbag. I'm not sure what the scenario was recently, but it was simple, right? Like one of my kids, even after I told them, you know, hey, look, you're going to spill that. Please don't. You're going to spill it. And then they spilled it, right? And I came unglued, right? I started swearing and I yelled at them and things like that. And you know how long it took to clean up the mess? Like 30 seconds, dude. Like I wiped it up with a napkin. 30 seconds. And now my kid's like, Jesus, Dad, you're an asshole to me, right? And I find myself doing this every once in a while where I pull them aside and I go, hey, man, I'm sorry. You did not deserve that. But it's almost like it's a fake apology at times because I end it with, listen to me, right? Like if you would have listened to me, do you think that's an apology? If you say, hey man, I'm sorry I overreacted, but you can avoid that if you just listen to what I have to say. Like it's almost like the beaten wife. Like a man beats his wife or he beats a girl and he goes, look what you made me do, type of thing. And I don't know, like I feel like I've done that in a way.
Yeah, that the second part negates the first part and makes it seem disingenuous. It could have ended with, hey, I'm sorry, you didn't deserve that. Full stop.
And then walk away. Yeah.
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 Separate conversation another time could be, hey, like you need to listen. And it's very frustrating when you don't listen.
Yeah.
So having some space between those conversations could be good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. I applaud your attempt to repair. And also like I would guess that repair attempt was better than nothing and probably did land like pretty well. Also, I think to your point, it could be even better by ending it after the apology.
Right.
Because you're probably like the fear would be, well, if I apologize, then they'll think the behavior was okay.
Acceptable. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, when really that's probably not the case. Like they know kids aren't dumb. After a certain age, they know right and wrong. And so, you know, if you're like, they know they should have listened. They know it was dumb, the thing that they did. And just you repairing is healthy for the relationship.
Yeah.
Also, it seems like sometimes it seems like it doesn't matter how much we lecture, like when they're really young and immature, like it seems like a lot of it's not going to get through anyway.
Yeah.
And so we just kind of have to be more even keel and measured with our emotions and just wait for our kids to grow up. Like I don't.
Yeah.
Like if the thing they did wasn't purposeful, then us yelling at them about it probably isn't going to make them be more purposeful in the future. Like if my 8-year-old son is like, he's famous for this. He loves to eat in the living room, which annoys me, but he'll have like a plate of food on the arm of the couch. And then he's also like extremely energetic. So he'll eat a bite He'll jump up. He'll like be playing soccer in the living room or baseball or want to wrestle. And so often he like knocks over his plate full of food all over the carpet, all over everything. And dude, if me bringing that to his attention was going to help, it would have worked by now. Mm-hmm. It doesn't register. So yeah. It's going to take him like, I don't think that's the issue. I think he's young and I think he's like impulsive, and me yelling at him isn't making him more thoughtful about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how to ask this next question. So I'm going to try my best here.
Yeah. Do it imperfectly.
Do you ever get frustrated at your kids because you're trying to avoid your wife getting frustrated at you for something, and you're trying to prevent a more stressful situation happening by you getting on your kid's ass, because you know that if something goes wrong there, then the next level when your wife gets involved is even more stressful and frustrating. Does that make sense?
Right. Oh yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. My wife is calmer than me. So I think it's actually like, I think that dynamic happens in our house, but I think it's the other direction.
It's flipped for you. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. That it's more like she's probably like, ooh, don't do that, so dad doesn't get mad.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, so like I would be the one that would be getting more irritated in the situation.
Gotcha.
That I'm the one that has the more like, oh, why do you do this? And why does this keep happening? And why is this messy? And, you know, I'm the one that's stressed out. And so
that's a two-way street for me too, because, you know, I do that, but I also know that my wife does that as well. And she's trying to prevent, like, I don't know. Have you ever had a friend? Maybe you don't get to see it in our own parents, but have you ever seen a buddy or a friend's dad in his life who was maybe hardcore, like hardcore ass writer, you know, got to be done by the books. And then all of a sudden he's a grandpa and he's this calm, collective, cool, like, hey dude, where was that? You know, 20 years ago when I, you know, that would have been awesome to have this version of you, right? Do you ever see versions of men just calming way down as they get older? And do you think that is a realization? Like, holy shit, I've been an asshole my whole life. Is that like a personal like flak jacket type of thing that they take off and remove? Or
I think it can be. I think there are definitely situations in which a person's like, oh, you know what? These are my grandkids, so I can just enjoy them. That I think that definitely happens. I think a thing that's worth bringing in, and you'll recognize it right away, is the role that stress plays.
Mm-hmm.
Stress plays a major role. Like there's a reason why grandparents can have more fun with their grandkids, because grandparents are less stressed out. You know, they're retired and they're chilling and they get to come and play with the kids for 1, 2, 3, 4 hours. And whenever the kids become a pain in the ass, they're like, welp, see ya. You're going back to your parents. You know what I mean?
Here, eat this sugar. Go home.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever you want. I'll give you anything you want. Well, of course, kids are going to be good, but like, we can't do that. So I think we're potentially one of the worst versions of ourselves when we are really stressed. And then there's to divide that up a little bit. I think there's stress inherent with our lives. There is research about happiness over the lifespan. And I've mentioned this, that it's the happiness curve over the lifespan is like a big U shape, which, you know, when you're young, you have high happiness because the world is your oyster and there's little to no responsibility and it's all fun. And the consequences of decisions and behaviors are very low and it's all fun and games, but it's your happiness in your life is at its lowest when you're in like your mid 30s to like early 50s.
Yeah.
And the reason that basically, generally speaking, your happiness is the lowest when you are fighting every day to raise kids and go to work and pay the bills and keep up with the Joneses. And like, that's the most stressful time of life. And then things start to lighten up once your kids get older and start behaving better, or once your kids get older and they're turning into young adults and they can drive themselves and they maybe take on a bill or two of their own and you don't have to like do as much management of them.
Yeah.
Once the stress lifts, then mm-hmm. you become happier. You have more money. You're deeper into your career. You're less caught up in the rat race. You've already had some successes. You've already remodeled the house. You've already done like all of these things. And like, it's like life starts taking its boot off your neck and then you can be like, you can relax. So I think most of us are the worst version of ourselves when we are under the most stress.
Yeah.
So then I think, so would you agree that's likely pretty true, generally speaking?
Yeah.
So here I'm going to go with this. Then I'll turn it over to you. I know I'm taking up a lot of time here.
No, I like this.
Okay. So let's say there is just plain a lot of stress inherent in living life with kids and a career and all the things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then you can either add to that stress by managing it poorly and having a bad attitude, or you can have work to have a better attitude so the same amount of stress affects you less. And to me, that's the point at which your personal responsibility enters the game.
Yeah.
And it's like, are you responsible for your attitude or not?
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't ever realize that that's a thing, you're just going to get carried away by your emotions and you're just going to live as this stress mess all the time.
Yeah.
But if you realize that your attitude is yours to manage, then you can start taking some steps to mitigate the stress and to choose a good attitude and to have a good day, even though life is hard.
Right.
So I think life brings a lot of stress either way, but that's not the full picture. The other part of the equation is how you deal with it. And that's your responsibility. A lot of people don't take responsibility for that. They just say, this sucks. This is stressful. That's why I'm in a bad mood. End of story. It's like, well, I don't think the story has to end there. I think you could say, and this is how I'm going to deal with it.
Right. Yeah. Okay. We're both products of the 90s. And Sega Genesis and video games. There was one football game that allow you to go in and bump up individual players to like level 99. And if you knew how to do it before anybody else who played you, you would go into a team that no one would pick. And all of a sudden now Miami of Ohio is beating Michigan, the breaks off Michigan or Alabama every year. Right. And so that's what I did. I was a cheater. I went in and I picked like the University of Tulsa or something like that. And then I would play my brother who was always like Notre Dame. Back in the day, it was the two hot teams were Notre Dame and Tennessee. Right. I think that was like Tennessee was when Peyton Manning was on there. Anyway, you could go up and turn all the like speed, power, agility, all to 99. If you could wave a magic wand or crank up character traits of an individual to make them more happy, what do you think those character traits would be?
Yeah. Adaptability and rationality and reasonability. Those are the top ones that come to mind, because with those things, you're better able to handle any bumps in the road.
Yeah.
You know, positivity.
Mm-hmm.
You don't always have to be super I would be super happy with neutral over negative. Give me neutral any day of the week over negative.
Yeah.
You know, and then from there, hopefully you go more into positivity.
Yeah. Because there is something about, I don't know, whether it's a dad or a husband, being able to just go, right? And not necessarily being, okay, buddy, you can do it. You're going to be great at this, or, you know, it's okay. I'll fix it, you know, or we can do this and this, as opposed to, whatever. Like, there's got to be a little bit of benefit from being meh about things, right? Over being overly positive all the time. Cause I feel like I had a buddy's, a kid I went to school with, his mom was like that. Just smiles all the time, happy all the time. Just like she was, it's okay. You can do it. You know, like just positive, almost to the point where it seemed fake, right? It seemed fake. And so, I feel like that's, like there would even be a point where that goes too far, right? Where, do you ever think do you ever think there's a time where being negative is beneficial? Or is that then cross the line where it's like, for example, oh, today, dude, worked absolutely sucked today, right? No, it sucked because you went out drinking last night and now you got a hangover and then you had to work in construction the whole day, right? You dumb shit. Like that, like, is there a balance there?
Yeah. So one activity that I do with clients is, I have them identify every single negative thought they have regarding a situation that they're in. Every nervous, worried, anxious, fearful, self-defeating negative thought that they have.
Yeah.
And also all the negative, like, attributes of the situation. We make that list. Mm-hmm. And then once they have the list, I say, look at that list. And the first thing I want you to do is just honor all of those thoughts, just allow those thoughts to exist and then just admit that they do.
Yeah.
And then after that, then I say, what do you think is the theme present across all of these thoughts? And they're usually like, oh yeah, well I'm expecting the worst or whatever.
Yeah.
And then we assess if those thoughts are based in fear or based in reality. Sometimes they're based in fear. Sometimes they're based in reality. Then I have them come up with new corresponding thoughts that are both true and more helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So then, you know, then they're able to say, well, yeah, even though I do think this negative thought, something else about that subject that's both true and more helpful is this. And so then we come up with this new list. And then I say, okay, well, what's the theme for your new list? And they're like, oh, well, I can figure it out. Or like, even if it's hard, this is figure outable or whatever the case may be. I think there's a difference between being negative and being a realist. So I think I think a person could say, hey, this is a bad situation. In this bad situation, X, Y, and Z things suck. These are bad. And I think anybody would go, yep, okay, fair enough. Those are all bad. But the problem is when people stop there. Because that's not adaptive. I think that being rational and reasonable and adaptive would say, okay, fair enough. That's the data of the situation. Mm-hmm. What will you do now? And that's where the adaptability and rational positivity comes in. Not like toxic positivity where you ignore the facts of the situation.
Yeah.
But like, real being realistic, like being a realist. So like, yeah, this thing does suck. What now? So yeah. When my basement flooded, man, I will not believe you if you tell me my basement flooding was a good thing. So if you were like so positive about it, I would be super annoyed with you, you know, but it's more realistic to say, yeah, man, that does suck that the basement flooded. Yeah. It is a big pain in the ass. It is going to be expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Da, da, da. Those are all true. Yep. Okay. Fair.
Yeah.
If I stop there, I'm going to feel like shit. So then if my attitude is my responsibility and I want to be adaptable, then what I would have to do is say, even though it sucks that my basement flooded, at least I'm able-bodied enough to clean it up.
Mm-hmm.
At least even though it's expensive, at least I do have the money to have it repaired.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it happened, at least it wasn't a fire, you know, you know, like there are reasons why it's not so bad. And there are reasons why I don't need to be that upset about it. Yeah. And so, you know, you used a phrase earlier, like turning the mountain or a molehill into a mountain.
Yeah.
I think you can be a realist and admit the things that suck, but I don't think that it has to stop there. I think after that, then you have to say, all right, well, what else is true? What can I do about this?
Yeah, man, I just am envisioning a world where, dude, it's so crazy. I think the humans have, maybe I'll ask this a different way. Why do you think people like shitting on other people so much? I mean, I feel like that's the majority of the world. It's the analytics and algorithm in social media, because whenever you see on social media something that hits it big, like most of the things that go viral are negative, right? Yeah. Not all of them, but a lot of them. And so it's just like, why do you think people shit on other people so much?
Yeah. I think it's the low hanging fruit to make ourselves feel better.
Yeah.
I think it's really highlighting our insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
I think the more secure a person is, the less they want to see someone else struggle.
Yeah.
And the less secure somebody is, the more someone else's struggle mm-hmm. makes them feel better about their own position.
Yeah.
And so I think it's low hanging fruit. I think, like, by and large, across, like, the people that all that negativity affects the most are the less developed people emotionally, or the less healthy currently at this point in time emotionally. And I think I've seen examples of people maturing, so to speak, where they say, geez, I'm so sick of social media. I used to get on there and like to shit on other people and read stories about bad things happening to other people. And I got all caught up in all that shit. And you know what? I'm sick of it. I don't like it. I don't think this is good for me. To me, that's an example of you leveling up.
Yeah.
If somebody is willing to know, once they recognize that and they don't want any part of it, like that's maturing. So yeah. I think it's immature. I think it's insecure. And I think it's low-hanging fruit to make ourselves feel better when we revel in other people's misfortune.
Right. Okay. I like that. How do we get better? How do we, as people who are struggling with something, or even if it's as simple as, dude, my wife does this and it pisses me off, or my kids do this and it pisses me off, how do we become better? Is there a muscle that we can train, or a scenario that we can learn how to live through on a more positive outcome? Is it books? Is it YouTube videos? Is it going to see a therapist? Or is it one of these things where it's just an initial first step that needs to happen?
Yeah. I love that question. There's, you had like a two or three different things rolled up into that. I think the main thing that you can do is focus on yourself instead of your environment.
Mm-hmm.
Turn inward and focus on the type of person that you want to be. So it's like, let's say that your kids never change their behaviors. What type of dad do you want to be?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say your kids never change their behaviors. How do you want to respond to stress? So you would be focusing on, how do I talk to other people? How do I respond to stress? How do I manage my emotions? All of those things. I think the more you cultivate and work on yourself, I think the prouder you will be to look at yourself in the mirror at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And so then whatever method you use is right, is good for you. So I think you need to train your brain no matter what it takes. So for some people, it's listening to podcasts. Like, I hope this podcast is helpful. For some people, it's watching YouTube videos. For some people, it's reading. For some people, it's reading self-help books. For some people, it's going to therapy. For some people, it's asking a friend to hold them accountable. For some, you know, it could be anything, but I really value stoicism. Mm-hmm. Stoicism basically, you know, there's a number of tenets to it, but at its essence, it's basically focus on yourself, focus on being the type of person that you want to be, and then be that person in every single situation.
Yeah.
But so I think that's true. And then I think when I see people struggling to manage life's stressors, I think a lot of the time they haven't done that internal work. So they're not anchored within themselves. So they are just 100% of the time at the mercy of whatever life is throwing at them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you want to be a skilled sailor. You want to be such a good sailor that even in a strong storm, you know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not a skilled sailor and you're out on a boat in a strong storm, you are getting blown all over the place, you know, and the same exact storm is going to be much worse for you if you're not good at sailing.
Yep.
But if you're good at sailing, you'll be in the same exact storm as somebody else and you'll manage it so much better. So being a good sailor, obviously in this, the metaphor that I'm using is you figuring out how to, like, what your values are, how you want to behave in life, how you want to act, how you want to respond, and then practicing all of that hardcore and staying good at it so that when stress comes in life, you are much more mentally prepared for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. I like that. Is there ever a situation where someone becoming happy triggers an emotion that then spins them back into like a negative, scary place? Have you ever ran into something like that?
Boy. Well, you know, I wonder if you have a specific scenario in mind. The thing that comes to mind for that is that there are people who basically prevent themselves from being happy. They basically self-sabotage because becoming happy and then having the rug pulled out from under you and falling is worse than just staying low.
Yeah.
So like, why would I ever let myself get happy if I think it's just going to be taken away? So they just stop letting themselves be happy because they don't want to get their hopes up and be disappointed. They'd rather just stay low. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So they don't even, it's like that one metaphor where it's like, you'll never learn to fly if you don't take that initial jump. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I don't want to fall. So I'll never fly. You know what I mean? So
Yeah.
One of those types of deals. So I gotcha.
Oh yeah.
All right.
I can share a personal, example of that. I got into this like weird, almost superstitious mindset for years where, if I caught myself looking forward to something, I would like stop myself because I didn't want to jinx it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it was like, oh, I hope I get this job. Oh, I think I'd be a good candidate for this job. I'd be like, no, don't think that. Don't think that. You probably won't get it. Like, don't get your hopes up. Yeah. Like, I would still go, like, I would still apply an interview, but like, my mindset was always assume you're not going to get it. Assume it's not going to go well.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to be disappointed. So I was like, I always had this mindset of like, don't jinx yourself by wanting.
Yeah.
Don't jinx yourself by hoping it could go well.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that for years. And I'll never forget one time I was walking out of Shields in the parking lot of the mall towards my car. And I think it might have been around like a job I had applied for or something. And I was like, I remember feeling like, man, I hope I get this. And then I instantly had my thought of like, no, don't think that. Don't jinx it. Like, stay neutral. You're probably not going to get it. And then I thought, wow, I am robbing myself of happiness. Like, mm-hmm. why wouldn't I just let myself be hopeful and optimistic and admit that I want it and then see what happens? And so I decided that very second, I'm going to try really hard to experiment with allowing myself to be hopeful.
Yeah.
And be optimistic and want things. And I can tell you the outcome of that experiment was that I didn't get things more or less often, but I did have more life enjoyment.
Yeah.
It's like I wasn't robbing myself of joy at every moment.
Yeah. Do you think, like, I was kind of the opposite of that when I was, like right out of college, I would be like, hey, here's a job I should apply for, vice president of advertising or something, you know, like some crazy shit like that. And then I would reach out and I'm like, hey, I haven't heard from you. I'd love to set up an interview. And they're like, you don't have any experience. How do you think, like, I even got one person to respond, at one time, and she's like, how did you think you were right for this job? And I was like, through proper training, I can do anybody's job. Like, I was so like, I can crush whatever is coming my way. And then it was just like, knock down. And then I ended up screwing in, I ended up welding, working a spot welder where I would, a piece of pipe would come in and it was boop, boop, boop. Like, literally anybody in America could do my job. And that's the job that I ended up with at that time, right out of college, instead of vice president of finance or whatever the hell, you know, whatever. Yeah. I'm like, I can do your job.
I would so much rather have people lean towards the shoot your shot mentality.
Yeah.
Because you never know what's possible. And I think I've seen that play out so often that, like, may as well try and be okay with being told no. But if you don't even try, then the answer is automatically no. Like, why not try and see if it could be possible?
Yeah. I had a friend. The confidence this guy had when talking to women was ridiculous. And our entire friend group was jealous of him, right? He would go, he did not care who this person was, where, who they were with, anything. He would go up to him and talk to him with such gusto. He could get him to smile and laugh. And then next thing you know, he's dancing with him. Next thing you know, they're making out. Next thing you know, we're waking up tomorrow morning and she's getting a cab, right? Like, I'm not saying that that behavior is acceptable, but what I'm getting at is that type of confidence. If everybody had that type of confidence in this world, like, we'd be solving all the world's problems. You know what I mean? Right. So,
oh yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah. And you realize it's just an attitude.
Yep.
It's just an attitude. Like, just go try. Like, and a lot of times confident people aren't confident because they know that they're going to get what they want. A lot of times they're confident because they're okay no matter what happens.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Like, that guy would walk up, I'm just hypothetically, that guy would walk up to a girl basically with the mindset of, let's see what happens.
Yeah.
He might, you know, he might not have gotten every single girl he talked to. There, I bet there were times where he would walk up to a girl and she'd be like, please leave me alone. And he'd be like, all right, cool. Have a good night. And he would just walk away unfazed.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. So
it wasn't about always getting what you want. It's about giving it a shot and being okay no matter what happens. And that's where the confidence comes in. Is like, I don't care if she says yes or no, but I'm going to go see if it might be a yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause if I don't, it's definitely a no, right? Yeah.
That's how I've been trying to like train my kids is go find out if it's a yes.
Yeah.
Just go see. It's okay if it's a no, but go see if it's a yes or not. And if they say no, then say, cool, just had to ask.
Yep. Absolutely. I like that. Kyle, great conversation today. Another one, dude. If I was in charge, we'd be number one on Spotify or on the podcast game. So, great conversations today. If you like the Man Therapy podcast, tell some friends about it. Tell some other guys about it. Spread the word. Go to Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever you download and listen to this, and give us a 5-star review. Let everybody know that we are worth listening to. So shout out Kyle. Thanks for bringing your insight. Shout out me for bringing my insight, because I'm a fucking stud.
I've always said it.
Yep. All right. Kyle, man, thank you very much. Have a great weekend, and we will talk to you guys all next week.
I'm 20, you know.
Dude, that's number one, just an amazing trip with buds, right? Number two, a giant 170-inch whitetail. I don't give a shit about growth scores. And then just the straight up, you know, that was 6 years ago, and you're still telling the story to me like it happened yesterday, right? You know what I mean? Oh, like, so it had an impact, dude.
Yeah. And that was, I want to say that's the first buck I shot out of state. So I've been on multiple trips, but like when you go out of state, you're a little bit pickier. Like I'm not filling the freezer here necessarily. I don't want to haul back a whole bunch of meat just to shoot a basket in Ohio or Illinois or something, you know, like I'm here. I spent the money to shoot a big one. So like, it's not like necessarily worth it just to go shoot a basket there. in terms of like, if I can make another trip back, I might as well hold my tag, bite my tongue type of thing. If you eat tag soup out of state, for me, it's a little different than eating tag soup here. So
yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, it's something I will never forget, especially being like the first buck that I shot out of state. And so it's like that, you know, you see the youth hunters go out and the 6-year-old kid shoots the 185 and you're like, dude, why would you start there? You're never going to, you might as well quit. I told my buddies at the end of that trip, I was like, so is this my last trip? Like, I might as well quit, right? Like, there's no sense in going back out. This is a deer of a lifetime. I might as well save the money and pick up golf or chess or something.
Right, right. Dude, that's awesome. Well, dude, congratulations on one heck of a story, man.
Thanks.
You know, great deer. I haven't even seen a picture of it yet, by the way. So you're going to have to send me an email picture of it. But yeah. Congratulations on a great trip. Good luck this upcoming season, man. And I hope you lay down another booner this year, man.
We actually drew Kansas again this year. So, three-peat? No, I'm just kidding.
Kansas is a mysterious place, right? It could be dead or it can be on fire, you know? And and it just takes one buck to walk by, dude. That's all it takes.
It takes one doe and you're just in it.
All right. My man. Hey, have a good one. Thanks for your time. We'll talk to you later.
You as well.